this is working all right. I can usually monitor this to see if it's looks pretty good. All right, well then why don't we begin? I know that you were born on May 31st, 1912 in Baton Rouge. Could you tell me something about your parents and your family background?
Yes. My parents were both from Louisiana. My father started out in the university, in Louisiana State University. He intended to become a doctor, but the boll weevil, which was an insect that destroyed the cotton crop back in the early 1900s, broke his father, who had three children in the university at one time. Mm. And so my father, instead of going to medical school, got a degree in chemistry.
Really?
He
at LSU?
At LSU. He taught chemistry in high school for 1 year, then became a chemist for the State Department of Agriculture, and this was largely analytical work on fertilizer and things like that. And after 4 or 5 years of this, decided it was too confining and became director of a state experimental farm, and then later became what is called a county agricultural agent, which is a job of teaching farmers to farm. My mother also graduated from Louisiana State University, then when time, of course, there was never any question about where I would go to school. I was obviously going to go to LSU. The question was, what would I do? And I was making this decision in the middle of the Depression. I graduated from high school in 1928, and although officially people think about the crash starting in 1929, actually, in the cotton-growing country, it started several years before that. So, I think I decided early in the game that I wanted to do some form of science or engineering. I was good in math. I liked the limited amount of science I had in high school, and I looked around and found something that said that chemical engineers earned more money getting out of school than any other branch of engineering or science, and that's how I became a chemical engineer instead of an electrical engineer or a physicist something else. I had, at that point, I'd never seen a chemical engineer in my life, and I didn't really know what one did.
What was your father's name?
His name was Gordon.
We
have different middle initials. His was Gordon D. Kane, and mine's Gordon A.
Did he have any influence in your decision to pursue chemistry, since he himself was a chemist?
I don't. Possibly. I'm sure. I'm sure the fact that he was a chemist was an influence on it. But as I say, I'd never seen a chemical engineer up to that point. The closest I'd come, there was a man in my hometown, which is a small cotton farming town, who was a sugar, what then was called a sugar engineer. He worked in the sugar mills in Louisiana all from September to December, January, then went to Latin America and worked until probably June or July, and came home and had a 2 or 3 month vacation. And I thought at the time that that was a great way to work. That was the closest to chemical engineering I came. But at that point, well, for a long time, LSU provided all of the a high percentage of all of the technologists for the sugar industry all over the world. There was something called the Audubon Sugar School. And it, about a few years before I went to college, it was the Audubon Sugar School was converted to the Department of Chemical chemical engineering at LSU, and that's
I see.
That's how I got to be a chemical engineer.
Now you started at LSU. Yeah, what year?
In 1929.
29.
I worked a year between high school and college as a clerk on the Missouri Pacific Railroad. I was just 16 when I graduated, and so I worked for a year and got money to go to college.
Where did you grow up, in Baton Rouge? You
no,
said
I grew
a small
up,
town.
I grew up in two small towns in Louisiana. One is where the experimental farm was, which is a town named Calhoun in North Louisiana. And then the rest of the time in one named Rayville, which is in the northeast corner of Louisiana, in the flat, rich Mississippi Delta land, where largely a cotton farming part of the world.
And what was it like growing up there as a child?
I doubt if it's much different from growing up anywhere else at that particular time. Of course, the things you remember about it are that, I don't remember thinking about any of the problems that are current today.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs were just a word. There was an occasional town drunk, but alcohol wasn't a significant problem. Crime was so rare that you talked about it for days and days afterward. And I grew up in pretty much the kind of growing up I think any small town person did in the 20s.
It strikes me as being somewhat unusual. Both your parents, at the time we're talking about, that both your parents were college graduates.
Yes. Well, it was. Now, my grandparents were not college graduates, but they were both very well-read people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were in a part of a culture where knowing Latin and they knew Latin and Greek, and my father did too, not from college, but from growing up. There was a period and a section of that part of the world where men of any background just sort of automatically knew Latin and Greek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they learned from tutors. And so I remember that about my... I remember that my father's father was a very well-read man, but I don't think he ever went to any higher learning.
Had his family been in Louisiana a long time?
Yes. My family heritage, my ancestry is almost entirely Scotch-English. Scotch-English, mm-hmm. And what is sometimes called Scotch-Irish, which... whether Scots who went to Ireland and stayed a few generations and then immigrated to this country. I mean, they're what is now the North Irish.
Mm-hmm.
So my ancestor was largely Scots. And they, for the most part, immigrated to this country in the 1700s, settled in the Carolinas, and then slowly worked their way eastward and southeast.
I see. So you really went to college in the, as you said, the Depression had started earlier in the cotton country, and so when you got, happened right after you started.
That's right. It was I was there during the Depression, and it cost me about a maximum of $500 a year to go to, total expenses to go to school, part of which I made in the summertime, part of which I made working, part of which my family gave me, part of which I borrowed. So, I was a typical depression child or depression student.
I imagine there must have been a number of people who couldn't finish going to college at that time.
Well, there were, and there were a number of them who would drop out for a semester and come back.
Okay.
And very few of the men I graduated with, probably less than half of them had gone through four straight years as I did. Many of them had started five, 2 or 3 years before that, and dropped out for a semester to work or something. And there were included in them were a number of people who had graduated as chemists earlier and came back to take take chemical engineering. Many of these were these sugar people who had gone out in the sugar chemists.
Mm-hmm.
And the sugar industry went to hell about that time, and so at least a third of my classmates were people who had done that and had come back to take chemical engineering.
What was your reaction when you got there? You said you had never seen a chemical engineer, and here you are in a chemical engineering curriculum.
I know. Well, you know, the first thing I saw, there was a demonstration sugar mill on the campus, and that, and of course, being in the fall, it was, and it operated, and so this was my first sight of any sort of chemical process, was the grinding of sugar cane and the conversion of sugar. And probably that my first year, I went out to a real sugar mill and saw it, and it was about as I couldn't understand the place of a chemical engineer in the thing, because this was about as unscientific an operation there as you can imagine. It was an old Cajun sitting with a kerosene lantern and a glass slide, and he would pull samples out of the evaporator to see if the crystals were forming properly, and he was the sole, I mean, he and his experience were the sole control, because you could, if you ran the evaporator improperly, you could make the sugar into syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And get no crystals at all. And so he was he with his kerosene lantern, his last slides, was the guy who controlled what sort of sugar this thing made.
That's interesting. There are a couple things I wanted to ask you about the LSU department. Was chemical engineering a separate department from chemistry?
It was a separate department. And it, at that point, it was sort of half in the engineering school and half in what they, at that then they had a school of applied science. It was sort of a bastard operation or a hybrid operation. And the chemistry faculty were probably much more dominant in the chemical engineering school than the engineering faculty was, largely because there was a Dean Coates, who had been dean of the sugar school for 20, 30, or 40 years, and he pretty much dominated the school, the chemical engineering department.
Mm-hmm. Because in 1929, chemical engineering was still a young discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't only been a couple, maybe 10, 20 years that it had become a real separate discipline.
Yes, I know. And of course, we start out with the Walker Lewis and Mac Adams text.
Yes.
But I think every chemical engineer, at least at that point, started with
mm-hmm. What was your curriculum like at the beginning? You took chemistry?
Well, as I remember, all engineers took the same thing for the first year.
Okay.
There were minor variations the second year. And in terms of the current chemical engineering curriculum, our curriculum was much more heavily chemical, because I took quantitative and qualitative analysis, which I don't think chemical engineers mm-hmm. take anymore. And I took 2 years of organic chemistry.
Wow.
And a year of physical chemistry. And I think I even took a second year of physical chemistry. Even at the time, I think even by the then standards, it was more heavily chemical than than average, and certainly much more heavily chemically oriented than the current curriculum is. And I graduated in 33, right after the bank holiday, and all the banks were closed for anywhere from a week to 2 or 3 months, or some of them forever. And I lived my last few months in college on cafeteria meal checks. Nobody had any money. The university let you sign for meal tickets in the cafeteria, and these things became the medium of exchange for the campus, and even the business, even the the businesses around the campus took them. So everybody finished on credit and using these cafeteria meal checks to live on.
Can you tell me something about some of the faculty there?
Yes. Probably the dominant member of the faculty was a Professor Coates, Charles Coates, who, as I say, had been, and at that time he was probably a little past retirement age. I would guess that when I graduated he must have been 70 or 73 or 4, maybe even a little older. And he had run this Audubon Sugar School for a long, long time, was a recognized figure in the sugar chemistry and chemistry business. The rest of the chemical faculty, the only ones I remember were Dr. Menville was an organic chemistry professor, and Arthur Chopin was a physical chemistry teacher. The chemical engineering professor, there was only one chemical engineering professor, and his name was Paul Horton, H-O-R-T-O-N. And at that juncture, he didn't have any assistants. I think there were no assistants professors. He had graduate assistants with the great papers, but that was it. And he was a man who was very aloof with his students, and after I graduated, I became very fond of him. He felt some need to maintain distance with his students, and once you graduated, you sort of got into a different category, and I learned to like and was very fond of him. And but in the class that I graduated with, there were only 13 chemical engineers. This was the Depression. At the time I graduated, there were not a single corporate recruiter showed up on the campus that year. I think for any of the engineering school, none of my classmates had a professional job. A lot of the petroleum engineers had got laboring jobs in the oil field. Some of the chemical engineers got jobs as sample boys in the refineries, where they rode around on a bicycle and collected samples from the tank farm. I didn't have a job when I graduated. I had a fellowship to go back to school, and I would have gone back. I didn't particularly want to go. Well, I was torn. The idea of going to graduate school was attractive, and I think I would have liked it and been very happy at it. But I'd been going to school working part time, borrowing money part time. I was in debt. I had two brothers coming into university at the same time. I couldn't take any more money from my parents with them having two more in college, and I had a great desire to go to work, but I couldn't find a job. A week before I was to go back to the university to take my graduate fellowship, I heard of a man who had graduated a few years before I did, who I knew just slightly. He had been probably a senior when I was a freshman, who had a job and wanted to go to graduate school. So I went to see him at his job, and went to see his boss, and got the dean of the college on the telephone, and on the phone we made a trade. We traded my fellowship for his job. Neither one of us, he wouldn't give up the job until he was sure he could get the fellowship. I wouldn't give up the fellowship until I was sure I could get the job. It was a lousy job that I got, but it paid reasonably well for that point. It was working in a big central steam generating station, power station.
That's Louisiana Power and Light Company.
And I was sort of a combination boiler feed water chemist, instrument mechanic, efficiency calculator, and it said I was an engineer, but I spent more time in work clothes than I did in any else. And it was a kind of job that, other than the fact that the salary was fairly good by the time, that you wouldn't want to stay on any longer than you had to. And it took me a while to find another job, which was with the Freeport Sulphur Company.
In your LSU training, what kind of laboratory facilities did they have? Did you have much practical experience to use later?
Probably more, I think, than average because of the sugar. Because this was not a miniature mill. I'm not sure what you call it. Much more than a pilot, but much more than a pilot plant. It had almost full-scale equipment, and there was the agricultural experimental station there was raising sugarcane enough to run the mill. So we ran this sugar mill every fall for two or three months. Now that was the only practical. All the practical experience we got was tied up with that. But the students ran it completely, and so we got more than just an onlooking kind of experience. But that was, and then Baton Rouge, for its time, had more chemical industry around it than many places. Because there was a big SO, Standard Oil of Louisiana, or now Exxon refinery there, and a number of satellite sulfuric acid plants and things like that around it. So there was probably more opportunity for field trips than many places.
Did you feel comfortable in your selection of chemical engineering as you went through LSU?
Yes, I did. I was happy with the selection.
How did you? You said you spent those 2 years at the power company, sort of biding your time.
Yes.
Because you had an income. How did you make your connection with Freeport Sulphur?
Well, one of my classmates went to work there, and I guess he got a job maybe a few months after I did, and called me and told me that if I showed up, he was sure they would hire me. And I did, and they did. And so I drove down to Freeport, Texas, and went to work for Freeport. And this turned out to be a very good experience. First, it was a good company. You know, the people were honorable and good people. And there were a number of things going on, a lot of activity going on, and I spent, I have to think now, five or six very, very pleasant and worthwhile years at Freeport. At first, I was involved in operations sort of things. We started something that would have been mandatory now, and that was the reuse of the bleed of the water that came, the bleed water that came from the formation. After you put hot water down to melt the sulfur, the water put down has to go somewhere. And at that point, it was just going out into the local prairie, and not because of any environmental reasons, but to reuse the heat. We can develop techniques for reusing it. Then I, in the Freeport, was involved in a manganese operation in Cuba, and I went down to Cuba and spent about nearly a year working on the beneficiation process for manganese, which was flotation. And this was, for somebody who had not been out of it, between my junior and senior year, I went on an ROTC camp up in Edgewood Arsenal, Maryland, and that was my one time I'd been more than 100 miles away from the lower Mississippi River. And so the idea of going to a place like Cuba for a year was fascinating, and I had a great time there working on developing this flotation process to recover manganese ore. I came back and I went then to...
What was it like in Cuba at that time?
This, you see, was 37, 38, something like that. Cuba was a very pleasant place at that point. We were just north of Santiago, about 15 or 20 miles from Santiago. There probably were not more than, we were a group of maybe 10 Americans, and there were probably not more than 10 Americans in the whole section around there. The people were very friendly. I joined a golf club. I joined the beach club in Santiago. I had a great time there. And the Cubans were very friendly. And I had the unusual experience for a young man of that time of having dates with a duenna along, where an old aunt or somebody came along whenever if you took a girl anywhere.
Were you paid American wages?
Financially, I did quite well, and we lived in a sort of mining camp, and it didn't cost much to live. And then I came back and went out prospecting for molybdenum in Nevada, in the north end of Death Valley, and it was That was interesting too, because our headquarters were a town of Goldfield, which back in it had several distinctions. One, in the early 1900s, it had 30,000 people and streetcars and stock exchanges. At this point, it had 60 people, a population of 60. It has a black mark in labor history because it was one of the places that President Roosevelt used federal troops to break a strike. And the strike was over a very interesting issue that doesn't come up anymore. And that was whether the miners had to change clothes after they came off shift or not, because the custom was to fill their boots with gold, with high-grade gold dust, and carry it out. And they tried to impose a clothes-changing policy, and that caused the strike. But it was an interesting place to live, an interesting experience.